Hey, Common Sensocrats. On December 1st, 2021, I had the absolute honor of interviewing Kim Klasick. Now, if you don't know who she is, then that means you've been living under a rock. If you do know who she is, or if you know the name but you're not quite familiar of how you know the name, well, let me help you out here. She is the one that had that amazing campaign video called Walk With Me, and she walked through the streets of Baltimore City in that red dress and high heels to show you the urban decay that the Democrat Party has caused in the last 50 plus years. This was a fearless campaign that not only gained national attention, but it changed the way the voters in District 7, Maryland, see their vote. While the outcome was not as desired, the final numbers were the best ever for a Republican candidate in her congressional district. And yes, I did read that directly from her PAC website, redrenaissance.com, which again, I'm going to repeat that, redrenaissance.com, which we will talk about in the interview and on top of the district that saw a big difference in numbers, historic numbers. So with all of that and more, give it up for the interview with Kim Klasick. Enjoy. Have you felt the world has lost its mind? That people don't have common sense anymore? Don't fear. This Common Sensocrat is here and you're not alone. You may agree, disagree, or just want to listen. If you're always up for a good time with some humor and some real talk, then you are in the right place. I am going to update you all with the latest news in politics, culture, lifestyle, fashion, so much more. I am your host, Carrington Rowe, so gear up for the harshest truth, not the sweetest lie. Let's go. Hey, Common Sensocrats. Make sure to subscribe to this podcast wherever you get your podcasts. I'm on Spotify, Google, Apple, wherever you get your podcasts. I am also updating videos for my YouTube and Rumble channel, but definitely subscribe to those anyway. So hit that button that looks like a bell so you can immediately get notified when those videos are released. Like and follow on all of the social medias, Facebook, Twitter, and Getter. Instagram, TikTok, Telegram, and of course, follow me on commonsensocrats.locals.com. If you have any suggestions on topics that you want me to cover and or have any questions, don't hesitate to email common.sensocrat@gmail.com. And now, back to the show. Kim Klasick, welcome to Common Sensocrat. Seriously, thank you so much for being here. My audience has been looking forward to this because they want to know what's going on. And yeah, so I'm really excited you're here. And I want to start, of course, with the video that puts you on the map. Your Walk With Me video. And I have to say, it to this day, it's iconic. I mean, and I know that's a really big and you're like, wow, that's a lot of pressure. But it's true. I mean, you really started a movement and I mean, it's amazing. And we met, just to give my audience just a little background here, we met at the Conservative Leadership Conference, thanks to my Uncle Rick, who introduced us, not physically, but in a nice virtual manner. And you were talking about, and by the way, Kim was the keynote speaker, and you were talking about the process of the video, and also how Benny Johnson asked you to dress in sweatpants. Just tell my audience, because I know the process, but tell my audience what the process was like shooting the video and just leading everything up to Kim Klasick.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for having me. If I seem a little under the weather, I apologize. It is actually freezing here in Baltimore.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I was just in Florida a couple of days ago, and I think the switch was not good. But, you know, again, thanks for having me. You know, the video was, you know, a huge blessing. We could not have expected our video to go viral. The fact that it did is absolutely amazing. But honestly, when I first got it back from Benny, And I looked at him and I was like, it's literally me walking down the street. I had no idea it was going to go viral. But when he contacted me, he actually dropped in my Twitter DMs maybe like a couple months before. And he was like, Kim, I really like your message. I think I can put in a 3-minute video for you. At that time, I did not have a campaign ad at all. And I said, all right, you know what? Come to Baltimore. Let's see what we can do. And so he came out. It was the hottest day of the year, mind you. It was 106 degrees here. And he said, look, you know, we're going to shoot tomorrow. We're going to try to get done as fast as possible. It's so hot. But I do need you to wear sweatpants and hiking boots because we're going to show people, you know, walking down the streets of Baltimore, you know, the sidewalks, the streets, the dilapidated housing. He goes, I just feel like it would be a cohesive look. And I'm sitting here thinking, like, I do not even own sweatpants or hiking boots. And I'm definitely not going to run out and get any. Yeah. And so I just said, you know what, Benny, I'm just going to show up as I'm dressed per usual. And I think people would want to see me as me, you know. So I showed up, I get out of the car, and Benny's like, what are you wearing? Now, meanwhile, you know, the pumps, they're like 3.5 inches. He's like, what are you wearing? And I'm like, this is what I wear. And he goes, how are you going to go down the street? I mean, we're going to be out here for hours. And I was like, this is what women do.
Yep.
We walk in heels for hours, you know, every single day. So, you know, we got it done. And as he was shooting, I don't know if you remember, but like the video started out, like he actually went up the shoes and mm-hmm. up and up and up. And then I started talking as I was crossing the street. And he was like, you know what? I just think it works. You know, he goes, obviously red or Republicans. And he said, I just think it works. And, you know, like I said, when I got it back after editing, I didn't think it worked. But he said, no, I think this is going to be a great ad. And so when he dropped it during the DNC convention. Mm-hmm. And I thought, okay, now no one's going to see it. And Michelle Obama was speaking at that moment. It was like 4 p.m. In the afternoon. And believe it or not, we ended up getting a ton of people. Sorry about that.
No, that's okay.
a ton of people watching it. And so we had millions of views. And, you know, we were excited. I couldn't believe that they pulled it off. But, yeah, Benny Johnson, you know, all the kids at Turning Point, they're really smart. And yeah. They really know what they're doing. They're social media savvy. And so if anyone has a chance to ever work with them, you should. Because they really are good at what they do.
Yeah, they are. And that was really cool, too. Yeah, when it did premiere, and I remember being like, oh my gosh, like, this is so, I mean, like, really, like I said, iconic, badass, like, the whole, you really started that movement, seriously. So much so that that article, I think, that I sent you with Fox News with our local elections, the girl Sarah Jonas, who won, which, you know, yay, red, big deal, and... Yeah. And I had the honor of doing the video for her. So I also do videography. And she looked at me and she even said herself, you know Kim Klasick. And I said, I mean, yeah, of course we know Kim. Like, yes.
Yeah.
She goes, I want to do that exact opening. At least something like that. And I said, well, I'll do my best with my little DSLR that I have, but let's do it. So we made it work. And people loved it. So and they immediately said, it has the Kim Klasick vibe. So... It's, you know, it was, yeah, they did a great job. Absolutely great job. And also the thing I want to get into also is it really highlighted, not only, of course, your fabulousness, but it really highlighted the urban decay.
Yeah.
And that, and it's, and also with not only in Baltimore, but in urban cities all over the country, it kind of made people go, whoa, we need to start paying attention here to seeing what the Democrats are really doing to the urban cities. And I think we had that same conversation in our local elections as well, where you said, yeah, we got to really pay attention to this stuff. So was that the reason, like, were you just kind of like everybody else, I feel like, in this country that are running, they've never ran before, they've never done anything like that, but they're just like, you know, I'm fed up with it. Was that also your approach going into it and just saying, you know, I'm sick of what the Democrats are doing. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if I got a shot, but I'm going to do it. Was that kind of your approach or did you always have political aspirations?
Yeah, no. So this was not something I thought about often. I ran a nonprofit for 8 years mm-hmm. called Potential Me. And so we were getting women ready to go back into the workforce. So they're coming out of incarceration, rehabilitation, or homelessness. But then some women right out of high school, right? Not everybody goes to college. So we were helping with career readiness, workforce development. But I noticed in Baltimore City, we seem to come up against so many obstacles. And it sounds weird. Why wouldn't the city want you to make sure that you were getting people employed?
Right.
But, you know, there's not a lot of career opportunities in Baltimore, number one. And number two, there are career centers that work with City Hall. And we received a phone call from one of the career centers. They knew that we were giving out clothes even. And so the woman that worked at the career center said, you know what? We would love to partner with you because we actually have a backlog of women that need work wear. And I said, oh, it's fine. We have a ton of clothes over here. We'll come bring it over. I'll get some employees or I'll get some volunteers and bring it over. I said, or if you want, you can have your ladies come to our office and they can try on stuff here,
right.
You know? And so she was like, oh, that's great. That's great. And so that evening I actually posted on Facebook. I said, hey, we're going to be working with the Career Center associated with City Hall. We need as much volunteers as possible. We want to get these women dressed and ready to go. I got a call the next morning saying, you need to take that post down immediately. Now, not from the woman that called, but actually from City Hall, from the mayor's office. And I said, well, what's the problem? You guys called us about clothing. And so the guy was like, well, we didn't call you. We understand a career center worker called you, but we'll figure it out because we already partner with other people. Now, you have to know at this point in time, of course, I'm already talking about how much I love President Trump. So if you look on my personal Facebook page, you can see that I'm totally a Republican, right? And I think they didn't want to be associated with the Republican, which I thought was weird. Like, obviously, they're Democrats. They have an agenda. But if we're providing for free our services to get women back to work, why would it matter if I was a Republican personally, right? It's not like it goes through the nonprofit.
Right.
You know, this is a nonpartisan nonprofit. We help everybody. We don't ask if you're a Democrat or Republican before we help you.
Exactly.
So he was like, no, we need you to delete it, erase it. Turns out that career center was actually raided by the FBI afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
So our former mayor, I don't know if you saw, Mayor Catherine Few was indicted for pay to play. That career center was raided
mm-hmm.
that we were trying to work with. Turned out it was a shill of a career center. And they weren't really about getting women employed. It was more about them taking in the federal funding and the grant money. So it all made sense after they were raided. But after that, I thought, you know what? There's so much corruption in this city. It's unbelievable. And I don't know if you recall President Trump going back and forth with former Congressman Elijah Cummings before he passed away
mm-hmm.
about all the trash and everything piling up in the streets of Baltimore. Well, so those were my videos that Trump was reposting. And this is before
right.
I was involved with Trump or anything. And he was saying to Congressman Cummings at the time, you know, we send millions of dollars to Baltimore in federal grant money to take care of this situation. How could Baltimore look like this? And so the more and more that started registering with me, I thought, you know what? We need to get somebody in the seat. And then, you know, he passed away. There was a special election, Congressman Cummings. I said, we need to get somebody in the seat that can hold people accountable, that's transparent, and that won't steal the money. He's like, where is the money? You
right.
know?
Yeah.
So I said, all right, I've already talked the talk. It's time for me to just walk the walk. I threw my hat in the ring. I didn't know anything about, you know, a district being D+30 or D15. Like, I wasn't
right.
thinking about that. I was thinking about helping Baltimore. And, you know, when I got in the race, the Maryland GOP were like, well, what are you doing? You can't win in that race. We're not going to raise money for that race. We're not going to exhaust donors on something we can't win. And I said, so what do? Just leave it uncontested? You just don't try? And that is the thing, you know, Republicans don't try in these inner cities. And so I said, you know what? Well, then finally, I'm just going to be the first woman that tries. So there you go. So you're going to have to deal with it because I'm running. And, you know,
heck
like
yeah.
I said, Benny came up to do the video. We went viral. President Trump was excited. And the rest is history.
That's incredible. Because I remember when we were in Louisville at the conference, you were talking a little bit about that as well. And yeah, it's amazing how much corruption is really in Baltimore. Like even with my uncle even mentioned a few of them, and I'm just like, that is crazy. And that's speaking of Facebook, because you are such a big name in the political movement. I mean, it's amazing how many people are really waking up to your message about what's really going on, especially in Baltimore. So with anyone that follows you, I mean, you do WBAL radio, if I can talk today, WBAL radio, and you're on Newsmax all the time, and really getting the word out, and not only about Baltimore, but about what's going on all over the country, and things that really matter, and with the quality of life that's being just going downhill, and it's awful. And are you starting to, at least with your, maybe more in Maryland, since you are in Baltimore, because we're starting to see what's happening with people rejecting the Democrat ways that they've had for decades. And we're starting to see the movement that people are like, nope, we don't want this anymore. We're done. Are you starting to see that and hear that from your audience in Maryland?
I really am. You know, it's interesting. I'm now, I guess you could say a follower, right? On Instagram, it's called Murder Inc. Baltimore page. Oh. And you actually have to be requested into that page. And so this is all Baltimore City residents, not all of, but a lot of people within West Baltimore, East Baltimore. So these are people that are dealing with the crime and violence on a daily basis, right? They're in those dangerous neighborhoods. Now, I couldn't even believe that they let me in this group, right? They let me in the group, and it was interesting because I commented on one of the posts. Believe it or not, we had a drive-by shooting, basically, where 7 people were shot.
Yeah, I saw that. That's so sad. Yes. So sad.
A mass shooting that doesn't get any attention, right? So I commented on that post, and there were a bunch of people that were like, hey, Miss Kim, we saw you run before. You know, we kind of thought about what you were talking about. This one guy was like, you know what would be awesome? If you just changed your party affiliation, ran as a Democrat or independent, and just won. And the guy, there was somebody else that commented beneath that, and was like, well, she can't do that. She's a Republican. And so other Republicans would be like, what are you doing? And so the guy comes back, and he was like, I really want her to win Baltimore City. I wish she would consider it. And I was like, wow. And he's right. If I would change my party affiliation, I'd be in office. There's no doubt in my mind. Now, would it be awful to get in there and be like, oh, sorry, I'm a Republican? Yes, it's awful.
Well, that's what they do. I mean, that's what they do. They just go, oh, I'm for you.
Yeah, they cheat all the time.
Right.
I personally couldn't do it. I know. But that is what he was saying. And I think that's what the thing is. It's like, we really got to get people to understand to vote more about, you know, for the person rather than the party. And so I think if we could just get over that hurdle, I think we would get so many people on board. You know, typically where I ran in the 7th district in the Baltimore City portion, a Republican gets 3,500 votes. I got 14,000 votes in just that area.
Wow,
that's
right.
We actually flipped West Baltimore. And, you know, for me, it's kind of like, if we could just help those understand that the Republican Party is not a party of racism. You know, there's not a party of old white people wanting to do harm to black people. Like, these are things that people truly believe.
Oh, yeah.
And so we just have to get past that narrative that you were talking about. But it's so hard because then you're combating, like, the CNN and the MSNBC. And they're not watching Newsmax in Baltimore City. You know, they're watching MSNBC. And so it is. It's really tough. But I think the more and more we have the conversation and have it in a very polite manner. Like, I don't say, you know, get off the plantation or do that. Because that immediately turns people off. We have to do it in a way where we can persuade people to really understand what we're saying.
No, exactly. Because that's so true. And also, on a side note, how funny is that with Chris Cuomo and CNN?
Oh, my gosh, I know.
I mean, I was just like, okay, all right, well, finally, things are slowly starting to move, but watch, they'll do what they do, and they'll probably bring him back or something, I don't know. They'll probably go, oops, sorry, we're going to bring him back. But that actually reminds me, so shifting to the schools now, speaking of getting the word out, and talk about that being the biggest part of the red wave movement right now, the schools. Like, as a mom of a school-age child, and it's obviously easy to say that you are, like, very concerned with the quality of education that they're offering. And it's, although with these new school board members, hopefully that'll change. But with school choice were to happen, because I feel like that's a big question right now, with, especially with the legislatures and everything with the, like in Ohio, for example, we have the backpack bill that's being passed around, and that would give kids vouchers for school choice. Would that be enough, in your opinion, or close to enough to turn things around in a situation just like Baltimore's?
So Baltimore is interesting, right? Okay. It's a little bit different. Here, they don't actually elect the school board members.
Really?
They're appointed by the mayor. So the corruption runs deep here.
I didn't even realize that. Wow.
Yeah, so we have the third highest per pupil spending in the country. Right now, we're receiving close to $16,000 to $18,000 annually per child. So you would think that all of our children would be going to Ivy League schools at this point by that amount of money. But a lot of that goes to the administrators, and I'm not certain how much the school board members make, but they are appointed by the mayor. So the school board is made up of basically, you know, friends of the friends of Democrats that, you know, are pushing the same agenda. And so you'll hear a lot about climate change in some of these schools. You'll hear a lot about things that, you know, really don't matter when it comes to getting a career and being successful. I'm not saying climate change isn't real, but, you know, when you've got 41% of your high school students who have a 1.0 GPA or lower, mm-hmm. I don't know if I'd be focused on climate change, right? 9 out of 10 black boys cannot read at grade level, and only 16% of our fourth graders can actually read. And so for me, you would think that they would focus more on basic, you know, math, reading, writing, you know what I mean? Making sure these kids are up to par. But what they do is they just continue to pass them through. And so you've got people grown, you know, basically almost adults in some of these schools. And the school board, really, there's no accountability or any responsibility on them because, you know, in their mind, they're not going to lose their seat because a parent's upset. The mayor can have them there as long as they want. And so it's very interesting how it's worked out. When I ran for office, I talked about, obviously, school choice and the mm-hmm. fact that our public schools need competition. But I also talked about the parents stepping up, something similar that we saw in Loudoun County, Virginia.
Yep.
But stepping up and demanding that they are able to elect their school board members. Now, a lot of people did point out to me, you know, Kim, if they continue to elect Democrats in these seats, how do you know they're going to elect, you know, other people at the school board level? And I said, yeah, you're right. It would be tough. But I think just kind of shining a light on the fact that all of these things are connected, right? I don't think a lot of Baltimore residents actually think about the fact that the mayor is in cahoots with the Career Center, which is in cahoots with the schools, which is in cahoots. Like, it's all this big pile of corruption. And I don't think people really know. I don't. And that's why I took the position at WBAL Radio, because I want to talk about it more. And believe it or not, there are people all over Baltimore that don't listen to WBAL, whether they're Republican or not.
Right.
Just because it's like number one talk radio, right? You'll get your weather there. You'll get your traffic there. And so I'm hoping to reach more people that way. But there's a lot of things in Baltimore that just needs to change. It's so crazy how it is. And it's really, really sad, honestly. It's sad to see. And so when you talk to people, I've talked to people and they're like, well, you know, this is racist and this and that. And I'm like, I hate to tell you this, but, you know, most of the school board, most of the city council, the last five mayors, our state's attorney, like, everyone's black. So if everything is so racist, say you say the system is racist, why do the black people now in these positions of power continue to have this cycle of a racist system? Why don't they change it? And the thing is, it's not about really the racism. It's about classism and corruption. And so you have people that are taking advantage of these individuals. Basically, I call it leveraging the urban struggle. They request federal funding based on the problems on the ground. They get the money, and then next year they go and request the same thing because they don't actually rectify those issues. And that's the problem with our federal government. It's like they don't look and say, okay, we gave you $20 million to fix this issue a year ago. What happened? Our federal government doesn't do that. They just give them more money, which is our taxpayer dollars, right? So we need to fix that in Baltimore, but on the federal level, we need to fix how we're looking at these situations individually. If I give you $20 million to fix an issue and you don't, I'm not going to give you $20 million to fix this issue until you tell me exactly where it went, how it was spent, and what happened. So that's another thing, too. Some people are like, why don't you just run for local office? And I'm like, no, I need to be on the federal level, because I don't think people realize exactly what's going on here, especially in that chain of command, basically.
Yeah, because it's true. Because right now, especially these days, the federal government has just crammed everything down our throats, including like, mm-hmm. pay us more money, even though that's been a problem for years. But you're right. It's like, yes, it's important to focus on local with these specific things to a point, but then it's like, wait a minute, but then we got to go to where it's starting and then start really fixing that. And then we can, it's just a mess. But speaking of federal, so with Congress, so the whole thing with congressional reform and like how that word's been passed around year after year after year. And I know with 2022 coming up and of course 2024 and beyond, do you believe, and we keep hearing, especially as of the past few years or so, it's been kind of staying the same. Nothing's really been, would be for obvious reasons. I mean, right now the Democrats are like, the majority like this, which is a good sign. So if the Republicans, which I have a feeling they will take over in 2022 and 2024 because of everything, the way it's shifting.
Right.
Do you believe that the congressional reform will actually happen, or do you think it'll stay the same?
So here's the thing, and I know it sounds awful to everybody, especially your audience.
Right.
But if people think that the Democrats and Republicans that have been on Capitol Hill for a while aren't in cahoots with each other, then they really don't understand, I think, how this whole swamp thing works, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we'll see on TV where Mitch McConnell's saying no to Chuck Schumer, and Nancy Pelosi's like, yeah, we're going to do this, and the Republicans that. And then they all go to Capitol Hill Club for dinner together.
Exactly, right.
That night. Yeah, so, you know, unfortunately, what I think and what I hope people do, even though I didn't really see a huge push come from our, because right now, you know, the Republicans that got on in 2020, we got some great rookies.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
But I think they've been very distracted on the day-to-day issues, mm-hmm. right? So they talk about what's going on day-to-day, which is tough. We don't want Build Back Better. That's a mess. I didn't really want that infrastructure bill. It could have been cut even further than it was.
Definitely.
And so you're kind of getting distracted by those issues, but I think we really need to focus on term limits. If you do a great job in Congress, you should be able to go to the private sector within 6 years back in your district and get a great job because you did a good job on Capitol Hill, making sure your district is thriving. And, you know, I just hope that we continue that, you know, with my PAC Red Renaissance. Mm-hmm. That's one thing that we pushed. You know, it's got to be for, you know, we the people, mm-hmm. and you got to push for term limits, because that's what's really holding us back, I think, as a country. We've got people that have been in this, you know, seats forever, and they only do what it is that, you know, their big donors want or lobbyists want, and they're making these backdoor deals. I mean, think of Nancy Pelosi, the fact that she just bought a $25 million mansion in Florida. How on earth did she buy this on $180,000 salary, right?
Right.
That's what it's supposed to be. So they're becoming millionaires. Mm-hmm. And so for them, this is a great, you know, way to make money, to have power, to have people bowing down at your feet. And I think sometimes people get in there and it changes you. You got to really stay focused. And, you know, I don't see reform coming anytime soon. Like I said, we got a great, great rookie class that mm-hmm. went in 2020. I think you're right. I think in 2022, we're going to do very well. We'll probably flip the House back. And then in 2024, we got to keep that momentum.
Yeah. You know,
we got to keep going. Make sure we flip the Senate and also get the White House back. But, you know, we need people to focus on balancing the budget and passing term limits.
Oh, yeah. That's the key, everybody. That is the key. So we got to stay focused, even between now and then. Stay focused, please. And also, back to your election in 2020, just for a second. Did you, because we got to talk a little bit, because I plan on doing another episode about this at another time, but I just wanted your take on it with all of the election fraud and all of that situation and that whole situation. And did you notice, well, let's start in the during your campaign before the actual election. Tell us a few of your obstacles you went through, and then did you notice any weird discrepancies from your experience on election day?
Well, yes. So, you know, we had a lot of internal polling done. Obviously, we had Trump's endorsement, so we had external polling done by, you know, the Trump Organization. We were neck and neck moving up into Election Day. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, Election Day, it was, like, very sad. Saw the numbers come back. We're like, yikes. But then even the next day, there was this huge mail-in ballot dump. And then it was like, wait a minute. And so when you look at the amount of mail-in ballots that came in, there were more mail-in ballots than actual voters in District 7. And so the fact that nobody looked into that, and it's not just District 7 that had that problem in Maryland. There were a lot of districts across the country that saw that issue. I think that happened in Rhode Island. You know, Bob Lancia is with Red Renaissance. He had a huge mail-in ballot dump. And then you look at the mail issues that we had, right? And I know a lot of it was hidden with COVID restrictions and, you know, all kinds of things. But there were some ballots that didn't even get back in time in some areas because of COVID. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when they were calling the states and calling these elections, it was very bizarre because you had still ballots that still had to come in. And then for some reason you had, like in my district, too many ballots that came in.
Right.
And so it's like no one was matching anything up. They were just calling them and moving forward. And I was like, well, wait a minute, you know? And I think that's why so many people were upset on January 6th. Now, I don't condone anything that happened there. But when you look at what happened as far as the election, I mean, I don't think it's shocking that people were frustrated and upset. If you lived in one of those districts, if you were one of those people where your ballot never made it to be counted, because, you know, a lot of people can track your ballot.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you wouldn't be frustrated, right? Especially if you're a Republican and you saw, you know, the Democrats kind of come in and it was very odd and bizarre. That will make anybody angry. And so I just thought it was very interesting how they pushed that through. I know Wendy Rogers in Arizona was working on a lot. Mm-hmm. I know Doug Mastriano in Pennsylvania, the senator up there, is working on stuff still. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. All I can do really is look forward and look ahead. I look at what states are doing as far as making sure that 22 is a fair election. I don't see a lot of things going in place here in Maryland, which is upsetting. Just so people know, in Maryland, ballot harvesting is actually legal. Mm-hmm. You can ballot harvest. That hurts us, right? Yeah. So there's a lot of nursing homes in Baltimore City. We didn't know that ballot harvesting was legal in Maryland. My team didn't even look into it. We just assumed it was illegal, and that was our mistake. But our opponent was actually going to these nursing homes and picking up all these ballots and then dropping them off themselves, right? And so it was a very interesting situation, and I think, you know, just like I said, making sure that more states act as, like, you know, Florida, Governor Ron DeSantis, mm-hmm. he's saying no unsolicited mail-in ballots. You have to request it. That was another thing. You know, people were getting mail-in ballots from people that lived at their house 10 years prior and then filling out their ballot and going in and voting on Election Day. You know, there's people that actually admitted to doing it. So, you know, it's crazy when you look at some of these races. You know, my race wasn't that close at the end of it. But there were some races where they were really close. Mm-hmm. And if they had any of those shenanigans going on, I mean, why didn't we contest in some of these areas? And so, you know, I think people always say, why do you always slam the RNC? And that, you know, because at the end of the day, the RNC could have stood up for some of these people that were in some of these seats where it was neck and neck and there was a problem with the mail-in ballots or even with the voting machines. And they didn't. They didn't do that. And I'm still very upset about it. The RNC raised a ton of money off of President Trump. They had the resources to send lawyers to some of these places right after the election. They didn't do it. And I think anybody would be upset about that.
Oh, yeah. That I know I definitely was. It was like, wait, knock, knock, knock. Where are you? Like, this is kind of a big deal. What's going on? But I'm the same way. I'm really hopeful for the future and just hopefully, you know, at least each state, I think every single state, all 50 states need to just start doing their own auditing because that needs to happen. But let's get into quickly on Red Renaissance, since that is your pack. And I know you said before we got into it that you're doing some changes. But I have to ask, how does Red Renaissance select a candidate to support? Like, do you contact them? Do they reach out to you? You know, are all of them campaigning for 22? Like, tell us a little bit about your process with Red Renaissance.
Yeah, so, you know, we began with Red Renaissance right after the election. Mm-hmm. Probably, God, we had the idea in December, and we went to go file it by January 2021. But for us, it was about the fact that we knew what it was like to not get support from the Maryland GOP party and then also the RNC. You'll have a lot of people tell you, okay, we have the RNC support, right? You were at the RNC convention and all this stuff. And I'm like, yeah. But at the end of the day, what happened there was President Trump actually had to make a couple of phone calls to make sure I was speaking at that RNC convention. People remember it was actually recorded in a warehouse in West Baltimore. And we didn't get the call until like hours before that it was finally sealed. That deal was finally sealed. My team stayed up all night to write the speech. I got about 5 hours of sleep. They ran me down to the warehouse and they were like, all right, go. You know, and so, you know, thank goodness for President Trump, but they did not want me speaking at that RNC convention. Just like the DNC, the RNC wants to handpick their candidates. And so for me, it was Red Renaissance. I thought, you know what? Why are we just supporting candidates that are being basically asked to run or that are already part of the establishment? Why not try to support candidates that feel compelled to run, like I did in Baltimore, because they want to make a difference? And so for me, that's more the kind of candidate that I want to see on Capitol Hill. Mm-hmm. Someone that has a passion to be there, someone that knows what's going on in the streets, someone that understands what's going on, rather than someone that's, you know, part of a party and feels like it's their turn to run. You know, that's how we never get to the we the people part, right? Because they're only going to toe the party line what they want. So I said, let's get started, PAC, and support candidates that actually feel that they can make a difference and they want to do the right thing and that are not already tainted, right? That don't already have people in their back pocket. And so a lot of people will reach out to us and say, because, you know, we don't ask people to run. They reach out to us and say, look, Kim, I've been running here for a couple months. I can't seem to get my name out there. I'm not really raising any money. Can you help me? And so we'll, you know, look into them, see that they're a regular small business owner that just got fed up during the lockdowns, right? You got some people that were like, you know, my church was closed during the lockdown, yet Walmart was wide open. Those are the kind of candidates that we love. We love those candidates that are fed up with what basically the government has been forcing upon us, right? No one wants tyranny. Nobody wants that. And that's not an American agenda. And so for us, it's about supporting those candidates. Like, if you come to the RNC, the NRCC, or any of these other organizations, they want you to come to them with money already in your treasury, right? They want you to win your primary first. And I say to myself, the regular man or woman that lives in their community, they'll never be that person, right? Because only the establishment people already have those lists that they can lean on to make that kind of money, to get that, you know? So you will never hardly see just the regular guy getting it past the primary. It's very rare. And so I said, we're going to support people before the primary. We're going to support your average American. We're going to support the people that say, look, I just want a shot out here. And so that's what we do. We have 23 candidates across the country running for the House. I think two of them are running for the Senate. And we're just supporting them even before the primary. And, you know, redistricting is happening in a lot of these different states, not just in my Maryland. But we should know by, I guess, January, where a lot of these candidates stand. Mm-hmm. But for us, we've already been there. And we don't care what your district looks like. I don't care if your district's an R+5. I don't care if it's a D+30. If you feel like you can get in there and make a change and connect with the people, this is somebody that grew up in the community, that's on the ground, that knows everyone else like them, that is also fed up. You know, with my campaign, we had a ton of volunteers. And that's because they were just tired of the nonsense like me. You know, we didn't go out there and solicit volunteers. They came to us. And so we love that, you know, community members supporting those people within their community. And like I'll tell people all day, I hate the establishment on both sides. And I will always fight that.
Absolutely. Now, of course, we have to ask, we are dying to know, Are you going to be running for public office at some point? Now, maybe it might be tight for 22, but
yeah.
What is your plan?
So for us, you know, a lot of people have come to us locally and said, you know, we have people, you know, I have a friend actually, and I can't say her name yet, but she actually wants to run in a district that we were doing polling on, where, you know, our redistricting, I will now live in District 2. So we're going to talk it out. For me, I think it's about supporting the best candidate. Mm-hmm. If I'm not the best candidate, I'll get behind the best candidate. You know, because at the end of the day, we need to win these seats.
Bingo.
At the end of the day, we need to come together as a team and work with each other. I think one of the biggest hurdles we have in the Republican Party is we work against each other, whereas the Democrats are much more organized and they work together. You know, you'll see a lot of times Democrats will come out of the primary and they'll support whoever that primary winner is. For some reason, in the GOP, it's not always like that.
Right.
And so, you know, whoever's the best candidate to run, that's great. We left close to $1 million in our treasury to run again. You know, whether it's 22 or 24, we'll see. If I do run at 22, you know, I have to step back from Red Renaissance completely, because then, it, you know, it'd be a violation to the FEC.
Right.
So, you know, what do? Do we then go run and hope for the best? Or do we sit this one out and raise as much money as we can for those five candidates that we know will make it through? So we have to really think about this. You know, I want to be strategic. Last time around, we ran hard. This time around, I want to make sure we run hard and smart. And if I have to sit out, but also help other people raise money or even transfer some of the money from my campaign account to those in the state of Maryland that can get across, then that's what I'll do. You know, because at the end of the day, it's not about me. If we can't win in District 7, if we can't win in District 2, I'm sure there's people that can. And if we can't, even the other districts now, you know, with redistricting, then we'll get fully behind those people that can. Here in Maryland, District 6 is going to look really good in Carroll County. We have some people that are already running in District 6. If I have to literally stop what I'm doing to support that candidate to pick up another House seat, then that's what I'll do.
See, that's good. So that's the important thing that people... Before, I feel like before really even when Donald Trump ran in 2016, people kind of forgot that it's like, no, regular people can run. People who actually care about their country and their community and beyond can run. So, you know, of course, with the rules and regulations behind that regardless, but still, you can run and you got to make sure you have the right candidate. That is so true. And you got to support that candidate. But we got to give, I had an idea before you get off here. I had an idea for Mike Lindell that I think we can pitch him. So my dad and I were talking and we were like, hey, we need to have Mike Lindell make a My Pillow to Cry On for the Democrat Party when they lose in 22. Because, and even 24, we can make, put years on it. I don't know, but I think that would be a good little thing to kind of go, hey, Mike, we have an idea. Let's pitch you, you know? So,
yeah, sorry.
Oh, that's okay.
Yeah, but, no, that's a great idea. Yes. That's an awesome idea.
Just kind of like, here you go, put towels in. He can put his towels in there, wrap it up. I don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I know you got to get going, but before you go again, tell me, what is, because I always like to end my shows with a quote. What is like the quote you live by or just like your favorite quote that you just love?
Oh, that's easy. Denzel Washington. He said, to get what you never had, you're going to have to do what you never did. And I think those decisions that you make, they might be tough, but the tough decisions are the ones worthwhile. You know, and I just say to people, look, if you're thinking about running for office, yet you're afraid, you're afraid of being dragged through the mud or your reputation getting hurt, just think about how awful it would be, you know, to look back 10 years from now and see a government that is having more tyrannical control, more control over your life, the school system still terrible, your child not being educated, your grandkids. You know, at the end of the day, the best decision is just to get out there and get going, and you take the punches as they come at you. You know, I know it's tough. Trust me, I get dragged in the mud every day, but you got to keep going. You have to. So to get what you never had, you got to do what you never done.
God, I love Denzel Washington. Such a good man. But yes, but thank you. And then what's next? Where are you off to next?
Next, I'm headed to the studio, WBAL. You know, as far as it's going somewhere, I think tomorrow. Yeah, tomorrow I'll be in Massachusetts supporting the Ware County Committee. So it's like a central committee. They're raising money for some candidates they have up in Boston. So I'm up there to help them raise money.
Sweet. Well, Kim, seriously, thank you so much for doing this. I know you're very busy, so the fact that you took the time to do this really means a lot. And we look forward to seeing what you do next.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll be in touch.
All right. See ya.
Bye.
See ya.
Thank you for listening to today's episode. If you liked what you heard, don't forget to subscribe and rate 5 stars in the Apple Podcasts. I need to spread the word as much as possible about this podcast, and you all are such a big help for that. So thank you so much, and I look forward to you all to listen to the next episode.